Good evening, Chris. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you. Good evening.
Here at the University of New South Wales, I believe you're using the Navstar satellites. That's the satellites that can give us navigation and ranging information.
Yes, we've been interested in the use of this technology since the early 80s. It's the commercial possibilities which are driving the development in this area, and I guess we here at the School of Surveying would like to be part of that exciting development work, not because it's commercial, but really because the number of potential users is much, much greater than in geodesy. Now, we cannot claim to be doing anything new. I mean, essentially what we are doing is trying to change our focus on the most precise end of GPS positioning to the less precise. Navigation, single receiver navigation that gives you 100 meters is at one other extreme. But there is a whole continuum, a grey area in between, going up to what we call differential GPS, which gives you 1 or 2 meter accuracies, and then what we call precise navigation, which sort of crosses that 1 meter accuracy boundary, which is where we're interested in working. We think that working from the most precise to the least precise gives us certain advantages because we understand the system at a level of detail that no other group can work with. We already have, over the last few years, many experiments overseas where GPS receivers have been put into cars, have been coupled with CD-ROM and map display units, even synthesized voices, and this whole concept of the intelligent highway. GPS is really just one component of it. In fact, probably the least expensive component, because you can buy, even now, for only several hundred dollars, the core element of the GPS receiver. It's a tiny patch antenna on the roof and a cigarette-sized computer board. The challenge now is to tie it in with communications, so mobile communications, to tie it in with map display, to tie it in with the CD-ROM technology that allow you to overlay your position to a map or to some other sort of features that you wish to interest. And it's this amalgamation of products, of which GPS is only one part, which is the truly exciting area.
So no more trying to balance the malways on your lap while you drive around town.
No, I think we're several years away from that, but it's telling that in Japan, for example, there are several hundred thousand vehicles sold with GPS receivers. Now, I'm not sure what, they're probably not turned on, they're like cigar lighters. They're probably just an interesting accessory that is probably underutilized. In America, there's probably not more than a few thousand, but the ratio of the Japanese interest to the American interest is an interesting statistic. The European manufacturers are also working very, very hard, and I really do think that at the top end of the market you will see cars installed with GPS receivers. But to truly make them usable, you have to then synthesize the output in such a way that the average user can see it, either by a head-up display, a map unit, or even a synthesized voice that says that, you know, it doesn't tell you that you are at a such and such a coordinate, because many people don't understand what a coordinate means. But they would say, you are 100 meters from the intersection of such and such a street and such and such a street. And it's this transformation of the basic positioning information which is where the real challenge lies. There's only so much that you can do now with GPS. It's so cheap. It's available to all users. It's available to all small development companies. You can buy this basic sensor. The challenge now is to actually wrap it up into a product, of which GPS is only one component. And we here at the University of New South Wales are just starting to feel the waters in this area by taking our quite deep understanding of GPS and looking at alternative ways of providing this positioning information.
So you're really looking for niche market products, aren't you?
Well, we ourselves perhaps are not in best position to do that, but there have been a number of initiatives over the last year, for example, that hold some promise. The Australian Space Office, for example, has funded a Space Industry Development Centre, an SIDC, in satellite navigation technology. the prime organisations are Queensland University of Technology, the School of Surveying and the Department of Electrical Engineering up there, and the School of Surveying at the University of New South Wales. So you could sort of say we have now an umbrella organisation with guaranteed funding from the Australian Space Office for product development. This money is not available just for us academics to, you know, play in our labs with what we've done in the past, but is actually going to be earmarked dollar for dollar with an industry partner's input. So if there is an interesting application in emergency vehicle monitoring or in road and transit authorities or in aviation or something, the idea is that these people would formulate a proposal to address a niche market that they have identified, because they represent the users, they know what they want. They would come to us and we would develop the proposal together to see what really needs to be worked on. Is it the interface between GPS and some other technology, in which case we then have to seek out another partner, so the person who is an expert in communications or an expert in land information systems or map display, digital data manipulation, and so on and so forth. And this would then be put to the SIDC, and the funds that would be provided by the contractor, if you like, would be matched by ASO to allow us to do a product development that is subsidised by the government. At the same time, the centre itself would build up its expertise slowly, because remember, we're starting from basically partners whose expertise up to now has been in surveying, and the area of GPS really has developed so quickly that we cannot claim to have the sole depository of knowledge on GPS, but we certainly are trying to address this gap that we have in Australia, that there is no other group that has this knowledge. And what you effectively have is, when somebody thinks of a good idea, they reinvent the wheel by trying to bring themselves up to steam on what GPS is and how it works and why the performance may not be quite what the brochures imply and how they should tackle this issue, which is probably one of the most critical ones at the moment. GPS works wonderfully. You can go out there and press the button, and 95% of the time you can be sure that it will give you a result within the specifications. But, you know, what happens with 5% of the time? How do you know when you're getting a bad result? How can you monitor it? And it's this sort of expertise that we can apply, trying to develop strategies by which we could then monitor this, so that we could then analyse, is it really critical that you have position 100% of the time within those specifications? If not, how do we get around it? Do we need another sensor? Do we use the odometer in a car, for example? Do we use inertial navigation systems? Couple it. There's all sorts of hosts of possible solutions, and the centre really is not trying to make a monopoly of it, but actually trying to provide a one-stop shop, if you like, where such advice could be given. And then if it gets beyond just the advice, then we can actually structure a proposal and try to address the specific needs of a niche market. But we ourselves are not going to actually identify niche markets.
What say you? You do hit on some product that proves quite popular and profitable, and presumably someone's going to get into manufacturing it and selling it. Who takes the profits?
Well, I guess the Australian Space Office is looking to the SIDCs to generate such commercial possibilities, and they have sunset clauses in the funding that really expect the SIDCs to become self-funding. So, you know, if we cannot generate funds from royalties or patent rights or whatever, then you could probably say we have failed. But the intention is that if we do work with partners and develop a product, and the ASO has put money into it through the SIDC, that they encourage us then to really hang on to it in some way, so that we can generate a cash flow that allows us then to actually continue this process once the funding ends. So the days of doing things for free have ended. They ended years ago. We are just moving into this area now of trying to negotiate equitable outcomes, and there is no doubt that the commercial possibilities offered by GPS are something that has never been available before to surveying organizations or geodesy organizations.
At the moment, the GPS is a military system, essentially, with obviously civilian uses. Has the encryption of the signals affected you in any way?
Yes. GPS is a military system. It's probably the one bad mark against it. And I don't mean that in the sense that, you know, I'm a pacifist or anything. It's just that the US military has actually implemented a policy by which they degrade the accuracy, the natural accuracy of the system. I mean, this is hard to believe, that $10 billion of US taxpayers' money has gone into build a tremendous system that lived was able to demonstrate its capabilities well beyond the design capabilities, was able to deliver 20, 30 meter accuracy. And the alarm bells then rang and said, hey, this is too good. The natural accuracy of GPS is too good. 20 or 30 meters is too precise for you civilians. We will implement a policy of selective availability, and we are going to artificially degrade the accuracy to this plus minus 100 meters 95% of the time. That is the negative side of it. How it affects surveying, of course, surveyors and geodesists are clever. It really has absolutely no effect on the type of accuracies they can get from the system. That precise post-processing, careful processing of the data, we can effectively overcome it. The person that is most affected is the real-time user, the yachty who, when he presses his button, he gets a number coming up on the screen, and this number has been artificially tampered with. There are strategies to overcome this, but all strategies cost money. So basically we are building what was a very elegant, very simple, very precise system, GPS. We have to now go out and think about developing ways of clawing back that accuracy that has been taken away from us. And this clawback in navigation actually means that they have to start looking and seeing how surveyors do some of their work. And for example, we move away from the idea of using a single receiver towards two receiver operations or differential positioning. That is, that both receivers' positions are corrupted by approximately the same amount, and what you really are measuring is no longer the absolute coordinate, latitude, longitude, and height, but the coordinate of your receiver relative to some other receiver, which could be a base station receiver, it could be Mascot Airport, or it could be the top of the Maritime Services Board Tower, or it could be at any sort of central installation. But this brings in a whole issue. It's not just a case that we now have two receivers, but then you have communication systems, because the master station now has to communicate with the differential, the second unit. So the user doesn't just go out and buy over-the-counter a $2,000 system. They have to now actually start paying a government department for the service of receiving this signal. They have to put in a communication link that is able to accept this signal. And basically the system is getting more complicated almost unnecessarily. And this is the tragedy, I think, about GPS.
So that would be an argument for a parallel system run by a civilian organisation of some sort, perhaps the United Nations or Inmarsat or someone like that, wouldn't it?
Yes, certainly has been floated a number of times. The only other alternative systems that are actually flying is the Russian version of GPS, and we haven't discussed this, called GLONASS. They are offering their system without tampering. So there is now, but unfortunately their system suffers from reliability problems. Their satellites fall out of the sky quite often. And also with the present turmoil in the Soviet states, we can't really rely on them as being a credible alternative. Combining GPS and GLONASS, of course, is a possibility and is something that is being pushed through world organizations such as aviation organizations. The other way, the Europeans have floated proposals for their own systems, but I think many of them really are, that's all they are, they're just bargaining chips. You cannot beat a system that is free, even if it has been degraded. And the US system is free, it's up there, it's flying, the receivers are inexpensive. What else we could say about it is that Inmarsat, which is the sort of organisation that you referred to earlier, of course wants to cash in on providing these transmission links. So they themselves are, well, I think it's more than just planned. They will put in the next generation of Inmarsat satellites GPS transmitters so that the Inmarsat satellites themselves will operate as GPS-type satellites. And in addition, they'll be able to transmit all this integrity information, this information that allows the receiver then to decide how to improve its accuracy.
Chris, they'll want to charge for those Navistar satellites, won't they, if they go commercial?
Yes, the base constellation of ultimately 24 satellites, there will be no cost to the user. You can use them. The enhanced products, this differential positioning system that we've talked about, this enhancement of the accuracy that you can gain, this is all going to be charged for. The enhancement of the reliability, the warning systems that would allow then, for example, aircraft to navigate with GPS safely. You cannot use GPS on its own, and the US Federal Aviation Authority has been very adamant that GPS alone is not going to be the be-all and end-all navigation system. It is just not precise enough, and it does not have the integrity. So there is a tremendous room for businesses to get in there and not only develop niche products, but actually to develop niche services. And our own government departments are also investigating these right now. There will be no free help for GPS users. Just take as an example, right now you can get a differential GPS system service up and running in the northwest of Australia, the offshore industry, the geophysics industry, at $1,000 a day. That's what the fee is. Now, GPS receivers, you can buy GPS receivers for less than $2,000, but to run them in the differential mode, a third party, right, not the US government, not the GPS instrument manufacturers, a third party is able to come in and provide a service to geophysical explorers, geologists, to offshore engineering groups for positioning of rigs and so on, at $1,000 a day.
So what an industry is now called a value-added service.
Yes, the potential, the challenge is to develop these services. We will be seeing, therefore, over the next few years, a blossoming of such services. What we need to be aware of is whether they're worth what you're paying for. And I can see the day, not too far in the distance, when people will have to be very, very careful about shopping and seeing what sort of services are being provided and whether what they're getting for is worth the money that they're paying for.
Well, thank you for joining us today on the Space Show, Chris.
Thank you, Andrew.